Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 114 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Philip Rimlock Keeney, and I'm joined tonight by Jason Neons Andrews. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Doing good. Had some good gaming this week, so that works.
Oh, excellent. That means we have something to talk about in your What Are We Playing section, unlike last week. And also tonight, a very, very special guest for the very first time, Connor Tango Keeney, my little brother, joining us tonight. Connor, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Super excited to be on tonight.
Excellent. I am so excited to have you. I've always wanted to kind of, because we like to, with all of our guests, we always do the, like, what's your gaming history? You know, where did it start? All that stuff. But our gaming history kind of overlaps a little bit. And so I've always wanted to have you on the show so that we could have that conversation and we could kind of share some memories. So very excited to have you.
Is this going to be like a therapy session where he goes into like why you always took the controller and he had to be player two and all of the damage that's done to him? Is that where we're going with this?
I mean, it might be. It might be. I was always player one. That motherfucker never.
This is a safe place, Connor. You can tell me, and yeah. I will protect you here. Okay?
It didn't matter that Connor was 6 years younger than me either. He always had to use the Duke, and I got the S controller.
Yeah, to this day, I still pick Luigi in all the Mario games that are out there. So because I never got to be Mario.
I do too, but that's because my favorite color is green, so I do it on purpose.
Fair enough. Well, before we kind of jump into all of that, I do have a question for you guys. I thought, you know, there's not a whole lot going on. I mean, Andor did start this week, but we haven't all got through it yet, so we're going to hold off on Andor till next week. But I thought it would be fun to talk about cheeseburgers. I'm quite the fan of cheeseburgers, okay? Right. And I've got quite an opinion at this point on where to go for cheeseburgers. But I wanted to see what you guys thought. So, Connor, I'll go to you first. If you're going to get a cheeseburger, you're going to get a good cheeseburger. Where are you going?
I mean, if it was up to me and I could go anywhere, it'd be Whataburger. But where I live, there's no Whataburger. So I'm kind of hamstrung there. I mean, I guess I would go to Five Guys just because that's what's in my area, but if I had any sort of choice, it'd be a Whataburger for a cheeseburger.
I mean, are we talking like fast food?
I mean, yeah, it's the fast food cheeseburger. I mean, we all know that you can go, like, there's a place down the road.
Romey, whatever, blah, blah.
Yeah, there's a place down the road for me in Rockwall. What's it called? Wells Cattle Company, and like tip-top motherfucking cheeseburgers. I'm telling you, man. Great cheeseburgers. But like, we got to stick with a fast food place.
All right. Well, I mean, my first initial thought was basically the same exact thing Connor is saying, which is going Five Guys, right? I mean, Five Guys is just a good burger. You can do a whole lot of things with it. It's like a poor man's, steakhouse where you can go either whether you're going to the Texas Steakhouse or if you're going to, where you go and you get the peanuts. You know what I mean? Like, it's that exact same kind of feel. Texas Roadhouse. What did I say? Texas Longhorn?
You said Texas Steakhouse.
Whatever. Texas Roadhouse. Yes.
Okay.
And so it's kind of like a poor man's version of that with burger, right? Like, you're going, you're getting some good meat. You've got the peanuts. Like, I don't know. It's a decent little experience. But then I kind of stopped and thought for a second. Fast food places, burger. I don't have one here. It's been a long time since I've had one, but we're going to go to Lubbock here. And I'm going to say there is a place called Steak Express.
Okay, yeah, Steak Express. Yeah.
They are either delivery or takeout only. They have no dine-in. Mm-hmm. And it is just like a steak burger. And
right, dude, yeah.
That thing's good.
Do you guys, I mean, both of y'all are over in Georgia. Do you have Steak and Shake over there?
We do have Steak and Shake.
Yeah, we do. I'm kind of, you know, my wife loves Steak and Shake. It's okay. It's good. It's fine.
Yeah. It's the closest thing to Steak Express that I found outside of Lubbock. I mean, I'm not saying it's the same, but it's the closest thing. But okay, for me, I'm with you, Connor, in that Whataburger is a pretty good cheeseburger. But you got to get the brioche bun. Do you guys know this? Like, you can order a Whataburger on a brioche bun. Did you guys know this?
Have a Whataburger here in Georgia? Because I'm about to say, okay. I haven't seen one, which is increased the amount or lowered the amount of time I've had to wait in line. in the drive-thru.
Yeah, so. Whataburger's line's always slow. Okay, so I didn't realize this either until I started ordering on the app, and it's like one of the choices is you can order it on a brioche bun, and so much better. It takes that burger to a next level. But also, I like just a plain old McDonald's quarter pounder with cheese. I think it's not a bad burger for fast food. So that's my second shout out. I don't know if you guys will eat the Whataburger quarter pounder. I don't see any excited faces over here, so I'm guessing not. But I'll take it. I'll take the Whataburger quarter pounder any day. All right. Well, let's get off cheeseburgers before I make myself hungry. And let's move the topic of the show up here to the front. As we sometimes do when we have a special guest, we definitely always like to get their gaming history, where they started, you know, how you knew it was your favorite hobby, you know, what's your favorite game franchises and everything, Connor. So why don't you just like go to town? Like where did you start in gaming? What was your first consoles? What was your first games? You know, your first memories of being a gamer?
Yeah. So, to be honest with you, one of my like very first like memories ever, I can vaguely kind of remember we had a game room in our house when we lived in Flowery Branch, I believe. And I think we had probably an N64 at the time. I don't know if you remember any of this, but I kind of vaguely remember this game room with an N64 that sat on the floor, and there was a big old TV. And I just vaguely remember that, as like, I would have been like a baby back then. But yeah, my first like actions.
Sorry, yeah, I was going to say real quick. Yeah, I totally remember the room, and it was actually a Super Nintendo that we had, not an N64. Yeah, we were still repping the, because the N64 had come out, but mom and dad refused to buy one. They didn't understand the difference.
Yeah,
I kept begging them for it.
Yeah, because the N64 is the one you like painted the house for or something, isn't it?
No, it was the Xbox I painted the house for. Maybe Connor will get to that story.
I will, because I remember that clearly, too.
Did you even help with that, or no?
I've never
heard that side of it.
My first like actual like video game, physically playing video game memories, there's two games that stick out in my mind. The first one being F1 2000. I feel like we played that a lot. I specifically remember there was a glitch on the Montreal circuit where if you hit a particular wall perfectly, it would shoot your car in the air. And I specifically remember doing that glitch one time, and my car landed directly on top of David Coulthard's car while he was driving through. And that was just the funniest thing for little me. Distinctly remember that. And the other one was I think it was the first ever Rainbow Six game. And I remember that distinctly because it scared the living mess out of me. For some reason, I don't know why, but it was terrifying for me to play. Even though not a horror game, absolutely terrifying. But those are like the first like actual playing games. And I remember the day we got the Xbox because I came out of school. You were already there, I believe. And you were like, hey, we got this Xbox game, but we didn't get the console. And for some reason, I believed you. Because apparently I'm pretty gullible, and I was like super excited, and I like yelled out of the car that, hey, we got this Xbox game, and then you're like, you're an idiot, we actually have the console too. So I remember that very clearly as well. And that game was Halo, by the way.
Yes, it was.
Which kind of leads me into, I mean, like growing up, that's what I grew up with, and that's kind of why I've always been into games, because it was just always part of my childhood. I grew up with it. We played Halo a lot. We also had that Lord of the Rings game that I vaguely remember also terrifying the crap out of me, because the very start of the game, I think if you mess up, you get killed by a Ringwraith. Terrifying. But, I mean, we grew up, and that was kind of like how me, you, and Dad all kind of like hung out together. It was kind of like a hobby we could all enjoy together. And so we played Halo. And then we kind of got into Splinter Cell, I think, a little bit after that. But really, like, a vast majority of my childhood growing up and playing with you and playing with Dad was playing Halo.
Yeah. Do you remember, like, playing Halo and, like, standing behind the rock with a sniper rifle and jumping up and down going, I can see you! I can see you!
Dad just
laughing hysterically as I'm standing there jumping up and down behind the rock. I can see you! I can see you!
I do remember that specifically, too. That was that was, what, the eighth level, Two Betrayals, I believe. I guess moving on to kind of some of my favorite games. Obviously, you know this. It's going to, like, Mass Effect and Halo are my two favorite gaming franchises. I would probably put Mass Effect just a little bit higher. Just because role-playing aspects of games is what I enjoy the most. I enjoy the storytelling aspects of it. I like being engaged. Some people like movies, but to me, I'm not engaged in a movie. I can kind of drift off a little bit, or TV show. So that's why I really like video games, is I'm engaged. I have an active role in playing. I'm actively taking part in it, and I'm affecting the story to a certain degree. Obviously, stories are set in certain ways, but you can't affect the story. And that's why I really like games like Mass Effect. Like I said, my favorite gaming franchise. I got into it late. I actually played I think a lot of people played it this way, but I played Mass Effect 2 first, and went back into Mass Effect 1 and then played through the whole series. On the same note, I like Dragon Age, another BioWare game, came around the same time. I love that one. Witcher 3 and Cyberpunk, really like CD Projekt Red's games. Witcher 3 as a story, the way they executed that, giving players good choices to make, but they did so within the bounds of a character that's already been fleshed out. The character already has previous lore. The character's like mannerisms and things like that are already established, and they still gave you choices. And really, for the most part, whatever choice you make within that game, you're still doing that, and it's still true to the character of Geralt, which is, I think, a completely underrated aspect of The Witcher and how it was written. Really loved Gears of War. Some exceptionally emotional moments within that game series.
Gears is great. Don't even shake your head, Jason. You're missing out.
I'm just, he's sitting, like, here's what's happening. I'm like the self-described, whatever, probably the biggest like Xbox guy on the panel. Yeah. And because I came to Xbox late, though,
yes,
yeah, like I'm realizing, like, he's sitting here going through those, and I'm like, I've never played Gears, I've never played Mass Effect, I've never played, I've never owned a Halo, like any of the Halos, like obviously there's some on, I didn't play those games, like I'm trying to think of what the other ones that you said, like. I don't play the like Xbox like standalone games that have come along. I love Xbox for a ton of other things, but like I'm just sitting here kind of realizing like, man, like I really don't know and play all of the like quote unquote hardcore Xbox games, like any of them.
Yeah, maybe one of these days we should do like a Twitch stream or something where you and I just start playing through some of these games, and I introduced them to you for your first time, Jason. But yeah, even Mass Effect, originally released exclusive to Xbox.
Right. Why I didn't get into it. Yeah.
Yeah. It later came to PlayStation, but it originally released exclusive to Xbox. So, as did KOTOR, which I'm surprised, Connor, you haven't mentioned.
Was the next game that I was going to mention. So,
yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Well, hey, so I have a question for you there, Connor. You know, obviously they came out at, completely different times, one after the other. But if you had to pick, and you had to pick of your CD Projekt Red games, Witcher 3 or Cyberpunk, which one would you, like, if one had to not exist, which one would you get rid of? Which one would you Thanos snap?
I mean, I guess I would... that's a really tough decision, but I think I would go with Cyberpunk. Just because
Witcher, I love Cyberpunk.
I like Cyberpunk. Like, a Cyberpunk setting is probably my favorite setting for a video game. And sci-fi would be a close second. Fantasy is really not my like favorite setting for a video game.
Okay, so wait. You're saying you'd keep Cyberpunk, or you?
No, I would get rid of Cyberpunk, which is saying something, because a Cyberpunk setting is like my favorite setting. It's just like I said, The Witcher 3, the way they told that story. With a character that's already been established, it's just a phenomenal way to tell a story. On top of the combat system is amazing.
I agree. Here's what it comes down to on these, and I'm just curious if you agree on this. Like, to me, it comes down to they're essentially both RPGs, and The Witcher is more immersive because the way everything with it is, you know, you're just on a horse, or there's a tree, there's monsters. Whereas Cyberpunk is a little more, I mean, albeit a little closer to what we're in now. Buildings, cars, guns, and things don't necessarily react the way that, you know, we kind of expect them through modern physics. And again, I said this back when I was reviewing Cyberpunk, but it, like, based off of its physics and knowing that you play Grand Theft Auto, like, basically around the same time of it, and it's another game that exists, you know, in this day of technology, it's way better with those kinds of physics. And so to me, the stories are both fantastic, but I can be more immersed in The Witcher. So that's just my take on it. So I was curious how you felt too.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. It's definitely, I think the sound effects for The Witcher, like, not necessarily the soundtrack, but the actual effects they have within it are also play a huge part in that. Like, one of the things that pops to mind is when you start using your Witcher senses to start those those going through those quests, like, the way the sounds around you also, like, kind of start to become more prominent, really helps with that immersion. And I think it's probably easier for us to immerse ourselves into a fantasy game because, like you said, we don't have a personal knowledge of how it was really like back then. Like, we can look at Cyberpunk, and one of the things that always gets me about Cyberpunk is how there's, like, no traffic in the city. Like, in reality, there'd be so much freaking traffic in that city, you'd be gridlocked all the time, which does kind of hurt with the immersion part of it. Cyberpunk's getting better for sure. But if I had to pick, I'd definitely pick Witcher. I just think it's a better game. I'm not saying that I don't really enjoy Cyberpunk.
Witcher's just
a better game, in my opinion, so that's why I would pick it. I guess we can finish up. KOTOR is actually the last game I was going to mention, specifically KOTOR 2. I actually played that game so much as a kid. I had a little, like, 3x5 note card where I wrote down, like, all the solutions to all the puzzles because I played it so freaking much that I already had them. Like, I would just go through and just – it was super quick that way. But I played that game a ton as well.
I didn't know that at all, but I think KOTOR came after – did KOTOR come after – oh, my gosh, I lost my mouse. After I left the house? I can't remember.
It would have – I think it came out before you left, but I think I didn't start playing it until after you left. But it was –
that's because he got the first controller.
I actually played it on PC, but it was an Xbox PC exclusive. So, but I played it exclusively on PC. Which kind of, like, all of those games I listed, like, already been brought to attention is most of those are Xbox exclusives or were Xbox exclusives at one point, which is probably why I've just continued to play Xbox. It's just some of my favorite games have been on Xbox, and I've just never felt the need to leave. I did have a PS4 at one point in my life, and I played some of those PS4 exclusives, and they just never really grabbed me the same way the Xbox ones did. The freaking controller for the PlayStation 4, I just despise it. I don't know what it is. It feels small. It feels flimsy. Maybe the PS5 one is better, but I could not.
I can hardly tell the difference between two of them, honestly.
Could not play. I despised it. I hated the controller so much it made me not want to play PS4, which is another big reason why I've stuck with the Xbox. So
it took me a long time to get used to the PS4 controller. It's definitely a very different controller, the DualShock 4. It is factually smaller, for sure. And the sticks, of course, are in line rather than offset, like on the Xbox controller.
Yeah.
The PS5 controller is a lot better because from a size perspective, it's almost identical to the Xbox controller, so it feels a lot better in your hands. But the sticks are still in line. So if you really like offset sticks, that would hurt it, obviously. So just looking up Knights of the Old Republic release date was 2004. So it did come out before I left home. I left home in 2007, but I don't remember us ever owning this game. So, because I missed it. I never played Knights of the Old Republic. It must have been one that you got into afterwards. I did have a funny story on The Witcher 3. So, Jason, I just got done finishing Days Gone, right? Which was a game that you pestered me for ages to play, right?
Yep.
Well, The Witcher 3, so it came out like within a month or two of Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to play one of these two.
Yeah, but I don't have time for Dragon one. Age. Yeah.
And I ended up picking Dragon Age Inquisition. And I thought it was okay, but I was like, meh, on the game in the end. And so I never played The Witcher. And Connor was like, you got to play The Witcher 3. Like, I'm telling you, this game's good. And I'm like, I don't know. And he kept at me and kept at me. And finally, I played The Witcher 3 and absolutely loved the game. When we did our top 10 of the last generation, Witcher 3 was number 7 on my list. So, you know, it was another case. And I told you Days Gone would have made that top 10 list had I played it last generation. So it's another one of those cases where you know, you guys were telling me to play a game and I was kind of refusing for a while, and it turned out to be one of my favorites. So Connor, was there any one moment that sort of solidified you as gaming as a forever hobby? Like for me, I know, you know, I was always into Super Mario. I liked the Nintendo stuff, and you know, we had the PS1. I remember F1 2000. I remember that glitch. I remember we played Crash Bash a lot on that PS1 too. That was another one. But I think the moment that for me, at least, that I knew that I would always play video games was that first time booting up Halo, and that Xbox. That just kind of was it for me. Like I knew that there was something about video games in the world that could transport you into that I would always want to play them. Was there any moment like that for you? Was it the same moment? You know, what was it for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was like initially booting up Halo, but definitely the very end of Halo. That scene where you're just floating in the longsword fighter and he's like, no, I just think we're getting started. That scene like kind of encompasses like just the epicness of what video games can deliver to you. A phenomenal story with a great finish to it, and you just leave like you're done and you're just like, that was a great experience, and I wish I could just forget it so I could do it over again. And that's kind of where I think that kind of solidified video games for me is a hobby that I was never really going to get away from. But like I said, I've just grown up with them. So it's kind of hard to imagine a life without it just because I've done it basically my whole life. But I mean, those like emotional moments, kind of encompass like my favorite memories from video games. From that moment, another one that sticks out for me a lot was when Dom died. Spoiler alert, since we haven't played Gears of War, but when Dom died in Gears of War 3, that was such a phenomenal scene, an amazing emotional moment that just kind of really helps, like, it just presents the wonder of what video games can do for you. I mean, a couple more. We're playing through the entirety of Mass Effect 3. Like, there's a sense of, I don't know how they do it, but they give you this sense of like hopelessness. Like you feel like you're fighting against the odds the entire time you're playing through the game. Then there's also things like completing a hard achievement. I think probably like my like pinnacle of video game achievements is Call of Duty 2. Had 13 achievements in it. One for completing each section of the game on veteran. And by God, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but I did it, and probably one of my favorite or my proudest video game moments. And then you have all the great moments from Halo, getting together with family, friends, you know, those LAN parties, and just the moments that come out of that. There's just the family moments that come out of that will always be part of, you know, my childhood growing up, some of my best moments. And then I know you put it in the show notes, but there was one time I was playing Need for Speed Hot Pursuit 2. part of that game is getting chased by police cars, and at one point a police car hits a tree or something, and I'm very confident to declare suck it, cops. And our mom hears that, and she was not happy with me, to say the least, and from that day forward banned me from Need for Speed games for all of my life, apparently. And from that moment forward, even like playing like Need for Speed Most Wanted, like years later, I was like, man, I really hope she doesn't remember that she's banned me from Need for Speed games. So there's also memories like that kind of stick with you too. But yeah, it's really all about the emotional moments that kind of make it all worthwhile when you're playing it.
Talk about full circle for you.
Yeah, I know, because now you are a cop. Yeah, right? You went from shouting confidently at your video game console to suck it at cops to being one yourself.
Yeah, so. That's just hilarious.
A foreshadowing there. But yeah, it's all about the emotional moments for me with video games. It delivers something that I think is phenomenal, and that's kind of why it will always be part of my hobbies going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I remember growing up, They used to call a lot of the games on Xbox, you know, bro shooters or whatever. You know, it was Halo, and it was Gears of War, and of course Call of Duty broke on. I feel like that's where it broke into popularity, was on the Xbox 360, with Call of Duty Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2. So it had this sort of like bro shooter vibe to it that people used to kind of make fun of Xbox gamers with, but. There's that scene in the middle of Gears 2 when Dom finds his wife in that sarcophagus. Dude, that was my introduction to, like, as a teenager, not being able to control the waterworks that came out of my face in that moment. Like, that was seriously, just a moment where, like, I didn't think that any kind of media could get this kind of reaction out of me. And then, and of course, it was a video game. But, and then you mentioned the social aspect as well. I know that for me, that I don't know what kind of relationship you and I would have without video games today. You know, you live in Georgia, I live in Texas, and it's so hard to stay engaged and stay hanging out, so to speak, without the video games, because it's so easy. You and I can just text like, hey, are you off work tonight? Yeah. All right, let's jump on and play Halo or Rocket League or whatever, and just kind of chat about life and things like that. And without games and what they can do to bring us back together across long distances, you know, I don't know where our relationship would be today. So it's very important. Jason, you want to add anything before I ask him his any other questions on this one?
Just, you know, as y'all are sitting there talking about it, to me, it was like, when I go back and think on console for me, it was like Nintendo 64 GoldenEye kind of thing, because then after that, I pretty quickly swapped to PC, and then all my stuff was like Age of Empires and World of Warcraft. And so like I became a PC gamer really quickly after that, you know, in 64. Like I had a PS1 and that may be part of it too, is, you know, I went through all the consoles, but I really spent the majority of my time. I played mostly sports games on my consoles. And there was a little bit of like, okay, yeah, I played God of War and I played Uncharted or whatever. But yeah, y'all just had a completely different experience than me. Kind of crazy. You know, how diverse gamers were even back then, you know, like it's the diversity has picked up huge now. But, you know, it was even back then.
Yeah, I think part of that was, you know, growing up in Ireland, there was a gaming PC vibe, but it was very underground. I remember having this friend, I don't remember what his name was, Sean maybe, I can't remember, but he convinced me to try to build a computer, and him and I built a PC together. Mm-hmm. But even then I couldn't get myself into really well. I remember just playing like FIFA Manager on it. That was like the only thing I built this gaming PC at the time, and I just played FIFA Manager on it. But it was just much more consoles over there. They were, you know, I think Ireland in general was just a little bit slower to technology for a long time. You know, I was moving over in 2007, and that summer I was introduced to MySpace. But that's also like the summer that Facebook started becoming popular. So like I didn't even have a period where I was on MySpace, because by the time that I learned about its existence, people were already like, no, you got to go to this Facebook thing.
No, that's over. Yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of gives you an idea that, you know, I think Ireland was just a little bit, you know, I don't think it's like that anymore, but certainly at that time in the turn of the 2000s, it was like that. And so it was more consoles. Yeah. All right. The last thing I want to ask you before we kind of get into the main show, and you've already kind of, you know, talked about some of your favorite gaming memories, but I want to just kind of, you know, is there any more that you haven't brought up? There's one in particular that I wanted to see if you remembered. So it was the Christmas that I got Gears of War, the first one. Do you remember this Christmas?
I remember not being able to watch you play that game. I think Mom said that I'm not allowed to have any sort of input at all into that game, if I recall correctly. I don't remember the exact year, but yeah.
Yeah, so it came out in November of 2006. So I would have been 17 and you would have been 11. I think I was 17 at the time, and you would have been 11. And we used to always get up way early on Christmas morning, right? So we get up, we get the game, and it's like two player, and you and I are just playing it. We're like through chapter one into chapter two, I think, before Mom got up. And she comes into the room like right as you're like chainsawing a freaking dude in half, you know, with your little chainsword gun, and she like lost her shit.
Yeah. We've all been there.
She didn't realize what kind of a game that she had bought me. She had just been like, oh, well, this is what Philip wants, so I'll get it for him. And then Connor's there just like, chainsawing through.
Didn't she make you return it or something? Or am I misremembering that?
No, I mean, I got to keep it, but yeah, you were not allowed to play it anymore. Yep. So, yeah, so, I mean, any other gaming memories that you have? I remember going over to the neighbor's friends and playing, like, FIFA. They would always get the FIFAs. I don't think we used to get many FIFAs. They would always get the FIFAs. We'd go over there and play them, and they were just absurdly good at FIFA. They would come to our house and play Halo, and we would destroy them. We'd go to their house to play FIFA and lose like 6-0 every fucking time. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I do remember that. I guess there's two more memories that just popped in my head. Both are Halo memories. I don't know if you'll remember this, but this was back when we were both actually pretty good at multiplayer games. Not anymore, because we both kind of suck at them. But it was a Halo 3 game, and it was a regular Team Slayer game, and two of our teammates quit, and it was a 4-on-2, and by God, we took that game, and we won that game, and that was, it was close, but we won a 2v4, and that was pretty great. Another one was...
Pinnacle of my gaming career.
Yeah. Another one was we had a LAN party. We did a little LAN party with those same friends that Dad was playing, and Dad and I were on different teams. And it was Halo 3, it was Valhalla, he's driving the Warthog around, and somehow I ended up in the back of his Warthog, and he didn't know I was back there. Of course, we were in two different rooms because of the LAN party, whatever, and all I hear from the other room is, why is there a red guy in the back of my Warthog? Because I've been in this Warthog just laughing hysterically, shooting everybody on his team the entire time, and unbeknownst to him, he's driving me around. It was great. And then I guess another one is playing Halo 1 and playing it on Legendary, and you're like, you have one bar of health, and you're like in one of the elevators, you're like, hey man, you gotta punch me in the back real quick so I can respawn with full health. Right. So
that's what you do, man.
That was another a good one. But yeah, I think I covered it. I think I pretty much covered all of it. So
yeah, no, that's for sure. That's what you did. Halo 1, you were that close. You're like, hey, you gotta kill me so I can respawn before we go into this next encounter. That's how it worked. And then Halo 2, they ruined it because in Legendary on Halo 2, if one of you died, you both went back. So Halo 2 still stands as the only Halo game that I did not complete on Legendary difficulty. So there you go. All right, well, I think it's time to get into the meat of the show. So let's go talk about some video games, because you know what? Each and every week we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and Philip monologues as you can handle in a week, simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, please share on social media or directly with your friends. The show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram, all at TriCastGamingP1, and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platform with your questions, and we'd be happy to read them on the show. All right, let's get into what we are playing. Jason, I feel like you have talked the least amount so far, so why don't you kick us off, because I know that you've got something that you're pretty excited to talk about.
I mean, you know, kind of true to form on some of these console games, you know, that are originated console game or whatever, I'm late to some of them, right? So I don't know. And also, we're in this stage of there's just everything's delayed, right? Like February of next year is going to be just it's going to be brutal for some people, because they're going to get just absolutely swallowed, and there's going to be some really good games that disappear because there's so many games anyway. But yeah, I got into Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I have stated on here that, you know, because it's on Game Pass and there's just not really anything else going on, so I jumped into it and just thought, you know. And I was downloading both it and Deathloop at the same time, and Assassin's Creed finished first, and so I thought, all right, I'll just jump in for just a little bit. And I honestly was, as I was loading it up, I was going like, I'm not gonna like this, and I, you know, it's probably not gonna be very good. It's so far, I don't know how many hours in on it I am, but I've got a couple days worth of good gameplay in it, and I would say definitely better than Black Flag right now. And to me, like, when I think Assassin's Creed, Black Flag was my absolute you know, favorite. It was the best. This has, you know, where I can jump in the water just like what Black Flag had. I'm controlling a ship. There's naval combat. You know, there's like things where I can change the way my ship looks. It very much has like a, oh, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it why Ubisoft is making a pirate game like this. There's a lot of that aspect going into this.
And, oh, yeah.
And along those same lines, it's so like, it's so obvious and so good that these games are doing things like that. Assassin's Creed has been out all this time and they're now turning and adding it to like, you know, Game Pass and things like that, because this is a game that has completely aged out. No one is buying it anymore, right?
Right.
And it's got an online store, right? Like you can go in, you can buy, you know, Helix dollars, and you can, you know, pay for skins and pay for, you know, gear and blah 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 and all that kind of stuff. Not that I am. I'm just saying it's all there, and they've got a well done store for it, and no one is touching it. Right.
Yeah. But
you can get people to grab onto the game and then they get hooked in into it and they're like, ah, you know, I'll spend, you know, $5 or $10 or whatever. And you do that times the multitude of new, you know, introductions of people you're getting to it. And it definitely makes these games some money late in the stage, you know, of, you know, they've aged, right? And people aren't paying them anymore on it. And they can turn around and now re-up some money. So I was seeing that and looking at it as I looked to the store, and I'm like, you know what, man? Like, it's probably pretty good for them. It's probably pretty lucrative. I get the strategy on it. So look, to get back to Assassin's Creed, what I would say is, you know, I have a recent string of going through several of these open world, you know, games where, you know, you dot the map with a bunch of stuff and try to go through and plop it out, right? You know, I've played Spider-Man that's the most recent one, but several others as well. And it like surprised me a couple times in that, like, I got to playing it, and when I first started, you like open up and you're like going back to playing as Leonidas on a battlefield, and you're just kind of fighting through. And at the very beginning, I was like, oh, I do not like this combat, not even a little bit. Like, I just didn't enjoy it. It felt clunky, and I just didn't like it. But it was mostly just like a timing thing. Now I love the combat. Me a moment. Now I really enjoy the combat on it. I also like that there's an assassin build that you can go out. There's a warrior build you can go out. There's a hunter build, and you can really play that style almost throughout the game. I say almost. It has these modes where you are in like a battlefield and you just literally are two armies coming together and you just have to, like, no way around it. It is warrior mode. Like, no matter what you do, you just have to hand to hand people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that part of it, it kind of, you know, penalizes you if you go in hard as an assassin, because you can't be running around stealth assassinating people. So that's my only one little thing where I'm like, eh, you know, but I've been surprised in that I get into playing the game. So far, I'm actually really enjoying the story. The other thing that I'm liking about this game so much is that only one time to this point anyway, and I'm pretty deep into it, only one time have I ever been in the modern world where they're getting into the Artemis. Like, at the very beginning, they're like, just because it's like Assassin's Creed, it's almost like they have to like be like, oh yeah, I'm jumping into the Artemis. And then they don't go back into it. Whereas like all of my previous iterations of Assassin's Creed are just so in and out, new day, old day, you know, Artemis heavy. And I got to the point where I, at the beginning, it was cool in like the first one. And then it was like, okay, yeah, we get it. Get out of this. So I enjoy that is basically almost completely gone.
Yeah, they went away, and it's just so that you don't get written in on, it's the Animus, not the Artemis.
Sorry, Animus. Thank you. Yeah. No, we're good.
Yeah. They went away from that starting, I think it was more or less starting with Assassin's Creed Unity.
Okay. Which they was the one right after Black Flag, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. That was the Paris one. They got, and they've drifted farther and farther away from it as they've gone.
Yeah.
Now Valhalla, like, there was like literally like scores of hours where I would play and you wouldn't go near the Animus. And then towards the end of the story, they brought in the modern day stuff a little bit more for a few scenes.
Yeah. And maybe they do that. I've not run into it yet.
But yeah, I would go I'm not even kidding you. Like, I'd go scores of hours, 40, 50 hours without going touching the Animus.
Yeah, that's what it feels like right now. Yep.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I was surprised with here is the diversity, where I get to where I'm feeling like, oh yeah, I'm really enjoying this. And, you know, I can do all these side quests and I can decide to be on my boat and do stuff, or I can decide to, you know, hunt out all these quests. And then they add in like, oh, okay, now there's this another aspect in that you've got these mercenaries, and the more stuff you do, it's almost like the Grand Theft Auto, if you will, and that your stars build, right? And the more trouble you do and the more stuff you do, the bigger and badder and more of them that come after you. You can kill them and get their gear when you kill them. And so, you know, you can, but it makes doing quests and things difficult, because like in the middle of you trying to go in on this camp, there's now these, you know, four, you know, or so of these like big baddies that are coming in on you too, and just messing everything up. And so you kind of like juggle the whole, like, do I pay it off so that I can finish this, or do I, you know, fight them so that I can get their gear and the experience and all that kind of stuff. Right. And so, I really was enjoying that, and I'm like, oh yeah, I really like this little add to it. And then it was like, okay, then they put in another thing where, there's this like cult that's going on, and now there's this whole like tree, and you're like hunting out these people, and you're trying to find who they are. And then once you've unmasked them and you find out who they are, then it's another tree that you go through, and you can go out and assassinate those people. And I'm like, oh man, it's like, there's just like all these layers that just keep happening. I kept like getting things added to it that I thought, man, I really enjoy this. Like, there's a good depth to the ship, or, you know, the ocean battle portion. There's a good depth to just questing. There's a good depth to these whole mercenaries. And I haven't gotten yet to the arenas, which I know there's arenas out there, because some of the mercenaries that are out there are specifically in arenas, and I've not found an arena yet, and I've been pretty much all over this map, so I don't know where I'm missing that, but arenas are something I haven't gotten into. I'm like level 20 right now, and I think it goes into like the 40s, maybe like high 40s, or maybe like 50s the cap. I don't know for sure, but
yeah.
So that kind of gives you an idea. I'm about halfway through ish.
Sure. Yeah. I hadn't played Odyssey. I skipped Origins and Odyssey. I played like all of the Assassin's Creed up to Origins, and I bounced there, and then I came back for Valhalla. But everything you're talking about is in Valhalla as well. Yeah. So
as far as chronologically, was it Odyssey and then Valhalla?
Correct. Yeah. So Origins was the first one where they went to these more bigger open world RPGs with leveling and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that was in 2017. And then Odyssey was in 2018. And then Valhalla is the last one that's come out, and that one was released in 2020.
So I have two final thoughts on this game, and then I'll kind of let y'all go. And so I'll say one is, by default, the controls on it, it felt a little cumbersome to me. Like, I just constantly, for whatever reason, just playing a bunch of other games, like, I wanted to like use B as my dodge or my roll, and it's by default, it's X or square if you're on PlayStation, and it just was driving me nuts. And I, you know, was like, whatever, I'm not going to go in and mess with all the controls. I'm just going to let it happen. My timing was a little off because of it. It's like I had to think about it to do it instead of it just being, you know,
right.
But I let it go. Well, then late last night, I'd been playing basically all evening, and I went till, you know, really late in the night playing, and you're using for your attacks, like your light and heavy attack and your aim and all that stuff. It's all like L1, R1, L2, R2, you know, left trigger, right trigger, all that stuff. Right.
Right.
And I'm so used to using my thumbs playing on games. And yeah, you maybe like hold down in like a racing game or something, a trigger, but like, I'm not used to like, you know, triggering your fingers so much, you know, like just using it just like constantly. Right. And I swear my hand was cramping like crazy from my fingers just sitting there, you know, just like twitching basically constantly. So when I got on today, I went into the controls and I swapped it to the alternate instead of the default. And so now it's X and Y. So are my light and heavy, which I'm like, actually now it's just back to like my thumb, you know, doing X and Y. And that means it moves juke to, you know, or dodge to the circle button or B button. And I'm like, sweet. And it took like, I got in a couple of battles and like my default, like kept trying to hit my triggers and it like wasn't doing anything. And it was driving me a little nuts, but it's been so much better. So I don't know if that's still the like way it is on new Valhalla, where if you were using your triggers by default, but it's terrible. So the alternate version is way better.
Yeah. So a lot of third person action games like the Souls series and Assassin's Creed, and they go with the R1 and R2 and L1 and L2 for a lot of action inputs. And I play enough of those games that it doesn't really bother me.
Oh, but
I
can nuts.
I can definitely see if you don't play many of them that it could for sure.
So then the next thing I had with it was, and then I lost my train of thought. We were sitting here talking the two things on it that I was going to comment. Dang. I don't know. Y'all go ahead and do your thing. It'll come to me. But there was one other thing on it that I definitely wanted to comment on. So,
all right. Well, if you think of it, we'll come back to you.
Nope.
Did you get it?
Nope.
It's not there. Yep. All right. Well, if you get it, we'll come back. Connor, I'd like to turn it to you and let you talk a little bit about what you've been playing. I know one game in particular is MLB The Show, and it's a game that we haven't covered on this podcast. But I know it's very popular. It's always high in the sales charts, and I know you're straight up addicted to it. So definitely want to give you some time to talk about that game and anything else you're playing right now.
Yeah, real quick on the Assassin's Creed series, I will say that it's the closest thing I've ever had to having a character named after me, because the main character in Assassin's Creed 3 was Connor Kinway. Very, very close to having a character named after me in a video game. So that was pretty cool. True.
I remember what it is, so I'm cutting you off immediately. I'm sorry. But
it's okay. Go quick.
I'm sorry. So what it was is when you very, very first start the game, it gives you the option of doing more like a Souls or an Elden Ring, where it does not track your quest and put pins on the map for you, where you have to like explore and find things and like use clues and like remember things, or to do it the like standard way that most open worlds are done. And I thought, like, okay, I did Elden Ring, but I actually hated Elden Ring and didn't finish Elden Ring was because I didn't know where I was going half the time, right? Like, and I didn't like that. I was like, if I actually knew where dots were and pins and had like a quest log, I would have done way better with Elden Ring, because the completionist part of me wants to like finish out the area before I move on, kind of thing. And like have some direction to go. So I started playing it and couldn't stand it and switched it back to the like standard, because it says like Odyssey is meant to be played this way, you know, and I'm like, I don't care. And I swapped it to the other way so I can have all of my directions. So that's the other thing I was going to mention. So I don't know if Valhalla is that way too, but I don't know. Like, I remember saying that about Elden Ring. Like, if I had a quest log, I would love the game.
Right.
That was it.
I don't remember if I had that option in Valhalla, but yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I want the quest log.
Yep.
Hold my hand. I don't care.
Yep.
All right, Connor Kinway. It's all you.
Yeah. So, I mean, playing the show. One, I'm a huge baseball fan. It's my favorite sport by far, which is probably not a very popular opinion, but definitely my favorite sport. So I've always wanted a really good baseball simulator. It was impossible to get in Ireland. I remember we had one that we somehow janked over there because games were region locked back then. I don't know if they still are or not, but we had one. It was the EA game for 2004, I believe, that we played for God knows how long. But the show is, for me, it's a fantastic baseball simulator, which really, I mean, the show games have been like that for a while. There's nothing like innovative as far as how it operates, but it's a fantastic baseball simulator. It's super easy to jump into and just start playing. For me, when I get off work, it's late, I'm tired, it's been stressful. So like just being able to jump into something and just mindlessly play something, that's where it's really had its value. It's why I keep playing it. And I really enjoy like the baseball tactics behind it, I guess you could say. As far as like, if you know anything about baseball, you got various different types of pitches that get thrown during different times in the count. What your count you're in is going to dictate what pitches you get thrown, and where the pitch throw is thrown dictates when you win and how you swing and all sorts of stuff. So I really like that kind of that mental challenge that can come about as you're hitting. And of course, when you're like, I've been mainly playing and you're like, it's called Road to the Show. It's where you create your own player and you play through it and you just play your own player. It's super quick because you're only playing parts of the game where your player is involved. So essentially, you're only playing when it's your turn to hit, or if wherever you're playing in the field is involved for whatever reason. So it's super quick. You can get through, like, I can get through a whole series of like 3 to 4 games in maybe 30 minutes, depending on how involved your player is. So super quick to do that. And one of the reasons why I think it's doing so well, I guess, is part of the game is it's got tons of different modes. Like, it's got the mode I just talked about called Road to the Show, where you create your own player. Obviously, you have your basic regular, like, you're managing a team. You have control over all the aspects of it. But they've also built in so much into that to where you can take that to as far advanced as you can go as far as contract negotiations, managing the minor leagues, all that stuff, and salary caps, everything. And you could make it as technically challenging as you want to, or you can take that and you can make it as simple as you want to where a lot of that stuff is automated and all you're worried about is picking your lineup and playing the game. And then they have the Diamond Dynasty, very similar to FIFA Ultimate Team. It's kind of the same concept. You create your own team, you can create your own stadium, and then you get card packs with players and you build your team. And so that section is in there as well. You can get card packs from playing any sort of mode. So it's not like you're specifically locked into playing in that particular mode. And so you get good, you can play whatever mode. And then they have the what's called the Hunt for October. It's basically just you play one or two seasons. So you can just, if you just want to jump in, take one team and take it to the playoffs, you can do that as well. So it's kind of got a little bit for everybody, and you can change how challenging it is to suit whatever you're feeling like doing. I haven't played any other modes. I've just played the Road to the Show mode, but like I said, it's part of, I think, why it's so alluring is because, one, it's a great baseball simulator, and two, you have so many options. You can just kind of do whatever you want, do whatever you're feeling like doing. It's also got all...
You play FIFA as well from time to time, right? Or you have. How would you compare it as a simulation, game simulation, to FIFA? Like, is it a better quality game than the FIFA series?
I don't think it's a better quality game. Some of it, just because of, like, some of the movements, I guess you could say, like, it's difficult to replicate some of the human movements you see when you play baseball. So sometimes it gets a little bit stiff and it can be kind of janky with the animations. I think that's just a challenge of transitioning what happens in a real life baseball game over to a video game setting. So it's, as a simulator, it's a little more janky. It's still smooth to play. Just some of the animations can be a little bit janky. So I would say that FIFA's probably overall, like, better. I wouldn't say it's a better simulator. It's just a little smoother when you're actually playing it. But FIFA, I think one of the reasons why I'd pick MLB The Show over FIFA is because FIFA games, like, you, I feel like if you don't play at least a 5-minute half in a FIFA game, it goes by too quickly. So you're looking at 10 minutes per game at the very least. Whereas, like, I can get two and a half games in a MLB game when I'm playing Road to the Show, as opposed to one game in FIFA. So it's a little bit easier for me to jump into and quicker to move through on that kind of aspect.
Fair enough. Yeah, for sure.
And I think that pretty much covers everything with the show. It's so easy to just jump into and play that it's one of the reasons why I keep playing it. And it has that thing where it's like you go 0-for-4 in a game and you're like, man, I gotta keep playing until I do better. And then you're like, oh, I went 3-for-4 in that game. I got to make sure it's not a fluke. And you just keep getting sucked into that loop of just playing over and over and over again. So,
I totally understand that.
And it can get pretty frustrating sometimes. And I've started to use it as like a teaching moment for myself where I just got to stay calm. And if I just stay calm and I just keep pushing through it, it's going to get better. So it's become like a little teaching, like a little life teaching moment for myself. So That's pretty cool too. Outside of that, I've been playing Cyberpunk. Obviously, two big updates have come out recently. We kind of talked about how RPG games are my favorite. It's improving the game for sure. There's been a lot of like quality of life improvements. I still notice that there's just some kind of bugs, I guess you could say, just some kind of moments where like the characters will still kind of jank out a little bit, or it gets a little stiff sometimes. So there's still some work that needs to be done on it. But overall, I think it's going in a really good direction. They've really improved kind of immersion aspects to it. One of the big things is the last update brought in like it's an outfit, like creator, where like you pick like the best gear and then you can create an outfit, an aesthetic outfit that renders over that. So you can have your character look whatever way you want it to without affecting your gear stats, which is something most RPGs do. So that's a really nice improvement to have.
Right.
Of course, they're adding more. They're still adding quests to it. They've added quests to it with most of the updates, which is good. It keeps you coming back, keeps you playing it. And they put new weapons in. And because I'm a big 40K, Warhammer 40K guy, they put a chainsword into it. So that has me absolutely psyched. I haven't found one yet, but when I do, you know it's on, because I'm excited for that one.
It's on. Yeah, that's right.
And then, go ahead.
I was going to say that we're going to have a story on Cyberpunk a little later in the show, but I was reading that the web page on IGN's website that's getting the most traffic over the last week or so is the Pan Am Love Story page. So apparently a lot of new nerds are finding Pan Am and realizing that's the waifu for them.
Yeah,
so,
she's definitely a solid A+ there. I can't really argue with that one. And then just continue playing Mass Effect. I play Mass Effect every year, at least one playthrough. Legendary Edition came out. I still haven't fully beaten Legendary Edition, even since it came out. I set the goal for myself of completing all the achievements in that game in as few playthroughs as possible, and it's infuriating because you can almost do it there in one playthrough. There's one achievement in that game you have to play through Mass Effect 3 a second time to get, and so that's kind of annoying, but still playing through that. It's Mass Effect. It's phenomenal. I can't recommend it enough if you hadn't played it. If you like modding games, Mass Effect's a great game to mod. It's got great mod support out there from content creators or community creators and stuff like that. So phenomenal game. That's about it.
Yeah, Mass Effect's another one that we haven't ever talked about Mass Effect on the show. I have played Mass Effect 2 and 3. I've played 1, but I only played a few hours of it before kind of bouncing off of it. And it's never really ranked high in my list of favorite games. It's not that I disliked it. It's just that there's other things I like more. I think, like you said, you really gravitate towards RPGs. And I think that they have to really suck me in to get me, because typically I'm when I game, I kind of want to always be doing something actionable, and I don't even the small bits of like talking and picking your response. Like that was the thing I hated the most about Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West. I hated like having to have conversations and pick dialogue options and stuff. I don't know why. I just, for whatever reason, I have to be always doing something.
Yeah, there's a lot of that goes on in Cyberpunk? Odyssey so far. No.
Oh, Odyssey. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Witcher 3 does too, though, and you love Witcher.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, there is every once in a while there's an RPG that will really grab me. And like I said, I like 2 and 3. Just they don't rank high on my list. So yeah, it's good to hear about Mass Effect on the show. It's a game that we haven't really talked about much. And Cyberpunk, though, Jason's talked about a lot. So we've definitely covered that one. Last thing I was going to say, Connor, MLB The Show, it's a game that you had not really played before until it came to Xbox, and it came to Xbox Game Pass last year. So another shout out to Game Pass and gamers getting games everywhere. That's a good thing.
It's a very good game that I've played through cloud as well, playing it on my phone. Through cloud, it's a pretty easy one to pick up and play. Do recommend a bigger screen. It can be really hard to see a baseball on an iPhone screen when you're playing it, but that's about it.
Very good. All right. Well, we're we've had a lot of great conversation about different games, so I'm really happy to that. I'm going to keep my section a bit short, though, so that we can kind of get into the news of the show. I'm still playing Pokemon Shield. I find it really enjoyable to pick up into like very short bursts, like 30 minutes at a time, usually late, like before I go to bed. That's about it. But still going through that, I've cleared, I think, like the sixth gym now at this point. So I'm pretty deep into the game. I still find a lot of the Pokemon to be just not as engaging as like original Pokemon. Like the designs, every once in a while I'll run across one where I'm like, oh, that's a cool design, I like that. But it's very rarely, it's much more rare for me now than it was when I played Pokemon Red and Blue all those years ago. And then I'm also still playing Tiny Tina's. I found so that I was going into areas and trying to like really like complete an area before moving on to the next main quest. And I think I burned myself a little bit on this. I find the game not as it gets a little bit repetitive when you do that. And so I think when I think what I need to do is kind of get back more on the main quest line. I don't think it's one of those where I would really want to sit here and do everything on the map. And I get people are going to write in and they're going to be like, oh, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, like all you do is the same four different things. You know, I'm like, yes, you're right. But the environments are a lot more varied. And also it felt like you kind of could mix them up. You know, you could do this one, then you could do one of this other quest type, then one of that, and then do a main story. Whereas like in Borderlands, even the side quests, it's all the same. You just go to a spot, shoot all the skeletons that run at you, pick up the thing, go back to the person, talk to them, go to the next spot, shoot all the skeletons that spawn. You know, it's the same, even the side quest, the main quest, everything, it's all the same action, really, unless you're on that overworld board. So I think that's why it's, for me, it's not, it gets a little bit boring, but I mean, I'm still having fun with the game. I need to kind of get back more on the main quest path line and stop trying to like really fully explore each area before I move on. So those are the two main things I've been playing this past week. I mean, Rocket League and Destiny as well, but I don't think you guys need to hear any more about those two. I've talked about them a lot on this show. All right, let's get into the news speed run. We've got a few really interesting stories to get into this week. First up, probably the biggest story of the week and the biggest story in gaming for a while, over 90 alleged videos from a development build of Grand Theft Auto 6 were leaked onto social media. First posted to the GTA forums by user TipoTuber Hacker. That's a dumb name. Get a better hacker name. The footage includes open world gameplay, which is alleged to be from GTA 6, and they do appear to be legitimate. It's claimed by the leaker that the videos were downloaded from the internal Slack channel at Rockstar. The leak appears to corroborate Jason Schreier's reporting that the game features, quote, a pair of leading characters in a story influenced by the bank robbers Bonnie and Clyde, end quote. The alleged leaked alpha build features both a playable male and female character, although these models could be placeholders at this stage, but I doubt it very much. The user who posted the initial leak on the GTA forums also claimed to have the source code of GTA 6 and GTA 5 and was threatening to publish it in full. They posted snippets and screenshots, but these claims later appeared to be proved unfounded, which is just good news for Rockstar. That would have been absolutely detrimental to them if their source code had leaked. Take-Two Interactive has started removing the leaked footage of GTA 6 from YouTube and Twitter, in the process confirming the leaked assets' legitimacy. The takedown notices are being issued on behalf of Take-Two Interactive and appear to have been submitted by Rockstar-affiliated email addresses. Before we get into Rockstar's comments on this and the latest news on the story as of today, I wanted to get you guys' take on this story. I don't know that any of us are like huge GTA fans, but this really rocked the internet earlier in the week. So, Jason, I'm going to kick it to you first. What was your initial reaction to this story?
I've seen it everywhere. And when I say I've seen it, I've seen the news about it, but I've not actually stopped and watched a single one of the clips. Now, it's just been a combination of I've had a really busy, week until the last, a couple of days where I've finally gotten done with work stuff and then had some time to, and it's just like I hadn't gamed in the week before that. And so it was like, I'm going to play some games. I just haven't stopped and, really watched any of these and or care that much, because I'm like, until I can play it and until it's, more official, I almost don't care, because they could change a whole bunch of stuff. They could, it could all be testing. I mean, look at like how clean and good the initial videos for stuff we saw in Anthem looked, and now let's talk about where that's at now, right? So I kind of am like, I don't care until the game releases. And so I don't know. I like Grand Theft Auto quite a bit. I like the single player version of Grand Theft Auto. I think the online is what's terrible for me. So I think it's a good game.
I mean, I think what was interesting about it was it actually showed a game pretty early in development, and you could see some of the behind the scenes aspects of how games work and operate. So apparently this build was from 2019, so it's a few years old actually, this build, but it was interesting from that aspect to see the different threads and how they pull on each other behind the scenes of a video game and make things work. There was a lot of talk, Connor, that this was going to be really detrimental to Rockstar, potentially delaying GTA 6, et cetera, et cetera. My opinion is that all it really did was get people talking about Grand Theft Auto a lot this week.
Right.
But Connor, what was your take? Were you worried for Rockstar? Did you think that there could be issues here?
No, I mean, I think everybody knew this game was in development, even if it's nothing like the leak is not the issue, I don't think. I mean, it's unfortunate, I guess, if you didn't really want to know about it, but the leak's not really that big of a deal. I think the bigger part of this is this seems like more of a malicious attack for an attempt to obtain money out of it. Like this is a individual who saw an opportunity to try to exploit one of the biggest video game companies out there for monetary gain. I think that's what's the most unfortunate part about it is just somebody doing something that's not right, and it's just unfortunate that we've kind of come to that point. I know, like, for both you and I, we work in areas that it's cybersecurity and stuff like that is kind of drilled into us, ensuring that we're not doing things that could open back doors to people.
Right.
But to see this kind of activity shift towards and target video game companies who are already video game development's already stressful enough, and now we've got people trying to exploit the companies in this way is just extremely unfortunate. Wish it didn't happen, really.
Yeah, that's actually, you kind of touched on something that initially, like, that was one of the first initial thoughts that I had, because they started talking about how it came from Slack. Like, the guy hacked in through an employee's Slack account, and that's how he got in. Mm-hmm. And so for those that don't know, because I actually didn't, like, I had always heard this term Slack, but I've never used it, and I didn't really know what it was. So if everyone else knows what it is, you can laugh at me. I don't care. But for those of you who may be like me that don't know, it's more of like a Teams or a Skype, just like a messaging, a text messaging type software.
It's a little bit like Discord for work.
Exactly.
Because it does have video and stuff and things. It's kind of like Discord for work.
Yep. That's exactly right. So my immediate thought was, like, could these video game companies gain something from kind of taking in some of the cybersecurity measures that companies in the defense contract industry and in the military employ? Because it seems so shocking to me that just hacking somebody's Slack account could possibly do that. Because, for example, where I work, there is no way they would allow my Teams account to be in any sort of public forum. It always has to be through my secure computers or devices. And so I just wonder if video game companies could kind of close up shop a little bit and be a little bit more secure, take some of the cybersecurity lessons that we have in our industry and apply them and maybe protect themselves a little bit better. So I'm glad you touched on that, Connor, because that was one of my first thoughts too. From a monetary perspective, I think this dude is just going to get fucking smoked. We're going to get onto that in a minute. So he's not going to get any money out of Rockstar. And certainly where he could have really done damage is with the source code. If he had had that, that would have been a problem. For average gamers that may not know, the source code is kind of like the Dr. Pepper recipe, right? You can get close messing around with ingredients and kind of get something that tastes close to Dr. Pepper. But unless you have the source code, you're never going to correctly, fully replicate that recipe. And so
it'd be
that's
like
why
the difference of we just talked about the physics and all the stuff, you know, Cyberpunk versus Grand Theft Auto. Take Grand Theft Auto and make it Cyberpunk, and it would have been a way better game. Clearly, the source code for GTA is, I think, a stronger, better version than what, you know, Project Red has. So you're exactly right.
For sure. And also that's where people develop, you know, hacks for the game.
Yeah.
Cheating softwares, all that kind of stuff becomes infinitely easier. Rockstar would have had to go back and rewrite source code. It would have been detrimental long-term to the game had that gotten out. All right, so moving on towards, you know, to the statement from Rockstar. They spoke on this past week and said, quote, "We recently suffered a network intrusion in which an unauthorized third party illegally accessed and downloaded confidential information from our systems, including early development footage of the next Grand Theft Auto. At this time, we do not anticipate any disruption to our live game services, nor any long-term effect on the development of our ongoing projects. We are extremely disappointed to have any details of our next game shared with you all in this way. Our work in the next Grand Theft Auto game will continue as planned, and we remain as committed as ever to delivering an experience to you, our players, that truly exceeds your expectations. We'll update everyone again soon, and of course, we'll properly introduce you to the next game when it is ready. We want to thank everyone for their ongoing support through this situation," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, Rockstar confirming all of this footage is real. It came from their game. But yeah, unfortunate that it happened in the way that it happened. But I'm glad that Rockstar seems to not believe that it's going to long-term affect the development of the game. Finally, the latest update as of today, UK police have arrested a 17-year-old in Oxfordshire on suspicion of hacking. And it's been claimed that this is in relation to the recent GTA 6 hack. City of London police said on Friday, September 23rd, that the arrest took place Thursday evening and that the suspect remains in custody. So yeah, this kid is going to get smoked on this.
It's so, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, smart enough to go in and, you know, or not smart enough, like, yeah, smart, intelligent, skilled to hack and get in, right? But young and stupid enough to try to blackmail and try to, and it's like, just, he's done, man. Like, and cyber crimes are a bit like, you know, the crimes for, I don't know about with UK, but America, at least cyber crimes are a bit like, you know, how, you know, you get a drug charge and you go to jail for like forever kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like the cyber crime punishment's legit hard, man. Like you can totally ruin your life for forever kind of thing with something like this.
For sure. Yeah, I remember reading, like, at the start, apparently the kid, like, the next day posted something like, "This went unexpectedly viral." Like, how the fuck could you not know that leaking the next GTA 6 was going to go crazy viral?
Well, and
I don't understand.
And leaked initially on the GTA forums. Like, he went to their forum and leaked. Like, dude.
Yeah, crazy stuff. All right.
Reddit or 4chan. Oh, let me just post this on their forum. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. What a cat. All right. Well, let's move on. If there's anything else that happens on this story in the coming weeks, we'll keep the audience posted, but let's move on. I finally got a little bit of PC nerd news for you all. So here we go. NVIDIA has announced the latest generation of its graphics cards, headlined by the NVIDIA RTX 4090. The card, which it's claimed runs Microsoft Flight Simulator at 2 to 4 times the speed of the highest tier 3090 card, will retail for $1,599 US doll hairs. The card will be released on October 12th. The RTX 4080, which is the slightly lower tier version, will be released in November, and it will have two SKUs, a 16-gigabyte GDDR6X, which will retail for $1,199 US doll hairs, and a 12-gig GDDR6X, which will cost $899 US doll hairs. The new cards are powered by Ada Lovelace, the new generation of RTX tech. It's designed to substantially improve ray trace lighting in games thanks to its use of DLSS 3. DLSS 3 is an AI-powered performance multiplier that can be up to 4 times the performance of brute force rendering, according to NVIDIA. Finally, NVIDIA announced Portal RTX, an official mod for the Valve's puzzle game made using RTX Remix, a new platform that will allow users to inject RTX lighting into classic games. That's Jason, cool. I'm going to spin this one to you first because I have no idea what the fuck I just said.
Okay.
For the last couple minutes.
First of all, similarly, this is one of those things where we've known for quite some time that NVIDIA was about to be, you know, releasing this. You know, it's kind of like iPhones. Like they have like a time they're going to come out, and there's been stuff being leaked. It's just, this is the like official announcement. We're at a point now in tech, on these cards. It's always this whole 2 to 4 times their previous generation. I mean, it's crazy the jump that we get, you know, between the 1080s to the 2080s to the 3080s to the 4080. You know what I mean? Like they're big jumps. The thing that's a little different now, and I can't tell if it's marketing or what, but they always have like a 3080 and a 3070 and a 3060 is like the entry join in. And so on and so forth. There's an 80, a 70, a 60. And this time around, they're doing a 90 and an 80 and no 70. So later on, they may turn around and come out. But this time around, they're really trying to, especially with the shortage of chips, they're going to come out and do their flagships and not even have the lower ends. And they'll come out with the lower ends at a later date. So they're going to come out with the more entry level stuff. I mean, it's a combination of, you know, they're going to see if they can squeeze some people who would normally buy, say, a 70. And now you're going to jump up an extra, you know, $500 or whatever to go to the 80. So there's some of that. As far as cost goes, I was reading a couple articles on people like, oh my gosh, I can't believe these are so high and it's unbelievable. And they're getting to a point, it's a combination of, I mean, everything is getting more expensive. And two, you know, even when we go back to like the 1080s, when you come out with the flagship, big bad boy, like the water blocked, you know, Seahawk, HWK, blah, 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 that's the money we were spending on those. So it seems pretty well in line with like the big, you know. Now, let me rephrase. We're talking the TIs and the black. So maybe they'll come out with another version that's even on top of these that'll be a little higher, because that, you know, around $1,700 is what you were spending for the like best thing money could buy graphics card before. So it's kind of in line with that. Maybe they're going to have an additional. But the big shock here is that they're not coming out with the like entry level version. All the rumor is that they're going to come out with that later, and it's based off of there's just not enough chips to do both, right, and so they want to do their premiere first. The biggest thing here that I was not aware of, that I didn't know was in development myself, that I think is really cool, is the idea of putting that it's smart enough and capable enough to put ray tracing into older games. That's cool.
Yes. Yeah. That definitely stood out to me for sure. Yeah. I agree.
That's cool. I was like, oh, that's, I mean, when I read that, I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. Like, I don't know to what effect and how good it is. And I kind of laugh a little bit because we talked about this last week with, they're doing a 4K remix of GoldenEye. And I'm like, there's going to be no ray tracing in GoldenEye. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, to an extent, like, you're still going to have pizza feet, You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you don't really need to be seeing GoldenEye in 4K,
right? That's where I'm kind of like, oh, we're gonna have RTX, you know, ray tracing and blah 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 lighting and in these classic games. I'm like, how good really though? Like, are we?
Right.
I'll be interested to see that when, you know, what that looks like, but that's kind of where it's at. So big changes here is that just the premieres, and you know, that's where we're at, and that's a new tech there. So pretty cool.
Very good.
The good news is the cards that are out now, like all your 3080s and 3090s and things like that, are going to be coming down substantially in price. That's kind of one of those things, sure, where a lot of people wait till the new ones start hitting the market, and then the old ones that are, you know, in retails come down a bit, and then people can grab those. So that's sure, usually something big that happens in the market too.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't have too much to add here, and I don't know if you do either, Connor, but the one and only thing that I saw is this is exactly why I don't get into PC gaming. Like, I could buy 3 PS5s for the price of this damn card, and I'm still going to have to spend 30 minutes every night trying to figure out how to get voice chat to work, or some other nonsensical bullshit thing on my PC with my $1,600 card.
Okay, but again, let's pause for a second here and go, the graphics that thing produces are like 8 times what the current gen PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X can even remotely push out. Like, it's not even close. Like, yeah, this is I so totally, much higher. But now also, too,
I totally understand that
these high-end cards are so unnecessary. Like, I have a machine that's still running a 1080 Ti water block HWK. I can run every game on almost max settings on the market. Like, there's nothing like, and yeah, it was big bucks, but I would have to go back and look at when the 1080 came out. But at this point, I mean, at minimal, you know, it was 4 years ago.
Right.
And it was probably a lot more than that. It was probably closer to 6 years ago. And it's great. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to change it. So you don't have to like buy these things, you know, every time they come out. Right.
Right.
So to that point, I'll just be like, whoa, a second. But this is great for people who have endless amounts of money and, or, you're still on a really old card that can't run some of these games. Right. And this is the next big, you know, if you're going to buy one, you might as well go for the new one kind of thing, because then it'll last you longer throughout. That's kind of where this hits.
For sure. All right, Connor, anything you want to add to this story?
Nah, I'm just right up along there with you. I got enough really expensive hobbies that I can't afford to be dropping this amount of money on a graphics card for a computer that I will not be able to put together. And then, I mean, if you're just not getting the best out of it, if you're physically, like, the card is physically better than what the games can even do, then personally, I don't see a point, but I can definitely see why.
And to that point, the most common thing I see is someone who goes and buys one of these cards and then has just like a cheap monitor and everything's bottlenecked anyway. And you're like, it's like, oh my gosh.
That's the most common thing I see. Every show I listen to where they talk about PC gaming, that's like the first thing these show hosts will say is like, if you're going to spend all this money, don't get a shitty ass monitor. Like, spend money on a good monitor too.
And people don't know it until they have no idea until you like go to a buddy's house, you know what I mean, and see a game that you own and you know, and you see it on their monitor and like, holy shit, like what the hell?
Yeah.
So different. For sure.
All right, moving on to number 3. In response to some concerns regarding cost of the new RTX cards, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang has said that falling GPU prices are going to be a story of the past. The full statement reads as follows, quote, "A 12-inch silicon wafer is a lot more expensive today than it was yesterday. And it's not a little bit more expensive. It's a ton more expensive. Moore's Law is dead, and the ability for Moore's Law to deliver twice the performance at the same cost, or at the same performance, half the cost every year and a half, is over. It's completely over. And so the idea that a chip is going to go down in cost over time, unfortunately, is a story of the past," end quote. Moore's Law is referring to the observation that the number of transistors on a chip double roughly every 2 years. As noted by MarketWatch, the 4090 is priced 7% above the 2020 launch price of the 3090, while the 4080 costs 29% more than the 2020 launch price of the 3080. So yeah, these things are getting more expensive for sure. I don't have anything.
I was going on the high end, so I was thinking like the 90s and stuff, right? And that's 7%, and I just said inflation, right? So where our inflation is at, what, 8 or 9 now? That's why I was like, to me, it's not that, I don't know. I just viewed this, and I was like, I don't think they're out of pocket. Like, I think it's on pace for what's normal.
I am inclined to agree that it costs what it costs. I mean, this is boutique, right? This is not your average gamer's setup.
Right. Yeah.
So they're going to be rarer. They're not going to make they're not going to make tens or millions of these cards, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to make maybe tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Right.
But by far their top selling version of this is going to be that, that one that was retailed for like, you know, $899, you know, that's right. Going to be the low end one. And again, all they're trying to do is take the people who'd normally spend $400 for a 70 or a 60 and go like, maybe we can squeeze, you know, a sixth of them to spend an extra $400 and get this because they need an upgrade. You know what I mean? Like that's a big part of it too.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you that this just costs what it costs. And yeah, if you can't afford it, it's not that you're being gatekept out of it. Yeah. You weren't going to afford it before anyway, when it was, you know, $100 cheaper.
Right.
Yep. All right, moving on. Number four, Madden NFL 23 topped the U.S. software sales chart in August, while PS5 led monthly hardware sales. This is according to data published on Tuesday of this week by the NPD Group. 2022 marks the 23rd consecutive year that a Madden NFL game has been the top-selling title during its launch month. This year's series entry is already the fifth best-selling game of 2022. Based on dollar sales, behind only Horizon Forbidden West, Pokemon Legends Arceus, Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, and front runner Elden Ring. Fellow new entry, Saints Row, debuted at number 2 on August software sales chart, ahead of Marvel Spider-Man, which jumped 81 places to number 3 following its PC release. NPD analyst Matt Piscatella said Spider-Man was August's bestseller across tracked Steam titles. Total consumer spending on game hardware, content, and accessories in August dropped 5% compared to the same period last year, that falling to $4.1 billion. Year-to-date spending totaled at $34.6 billion, representing a 9% decline compared to the same period in 2021. Again, I think this is largely attributed to there's not many games out there for people to literally go buy. So that's the problem.
On Madden, the one thing I'll say is, release month, season just started. It's really popular. I'm pretty sure I've seen somewhere that these sports games like this are pretty unique in that, you know, all games obviously have their highest sales like right when they release, but right, they like tailor off like way faster than all the other games. Like the for people sure who are going to buy the Madden 23 are buying Madden 23 when it comes out, right? Because they're like right, hardcore sports guys. It comes out, boom, they get it. They're not like buying it then 6 months later, right? Like, because then at that point, especially all these games, Madden 24 will come out and it's the exact same freaking game with, you know, with a roster update. So people like these fall off really hard in comparison to other games. Like, for instance, Elden Ring, which is still on top and has been out how long?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Elden Ring, it came out in February, March?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
So Madden's top, but will not be top next month. I'll just tell you now. Like, it'll fall hard.
Oh, yeah,
It'll fall hard.
For sure. Absolutely. That's the way these work. But I mean, it's still crazy that 23rd consecutive years that the month Madden comes out, it's the best-selling game that month.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. Making EA tons and tons of money. The one thing I wanted to pull out of here is Marvel Spider-Man. It was so in July, it was the 84th best-selling game And then in August, it releases on PC and it moves up to the number 3 best-selling game.
Yeah.
This is why Sony are bringing games to PC. Yeah,
exactly. We're the people who are pissed about it. It's like, hello.
Yeah. This is why they will continue bringing games to PC and why their launch on PC will probably start getting closer and closer and closer to their launch on PS5 consoles. And listen, they're late to this party. I mean, Xbox was at this party years ago. Mm-hmm. You look at something like Sea of Thieves and you look at its sales, it continues to be right up there in the top 10. I think it's like the 104th consecutive week or something like that,
yeah,
that Sea of Thieves has been right up there in sales on Steam. You know, Microsoft knew there was money to make there and they got in there. And I was thinking about this, and I'm interested in Connor's take because he hasn't really gotten to talk much on this particular topic. Obviously, he's not been on the show. But I was thinking about this as I was prepping for the show, and I thought it really makes that whole console gamer argument from a few years ago where they were really trashing Xbox, like, oh, you don't have any exclusives now because they're all on PC, right? It really makes that whole argument look really dumb.
It didn't age well, yeah.
Yeah. And I've been thinking that this whole subscription thing is going to be that next argument, that in a few years it's going to look real dumb because most gaming companies will have gone to some sort of subscription service.
They already have anyway. Who hasn't? They all have.
That's true.
If one of them doesn't have it.
It's true. I just think that they're going to embrace it more as it goes on. But I'm interested, Connor, in your take on that.
Yeah, I think with Xbox's strategy, we've seen it kind of, it's no longer just Xbox. It's Xbox and PC. Like, that's kind of the ecosystem that Xbox is trying to move into. They're not, their strategy is no longer console focused. They're making the best out of the PC market for a good reason. I mean, it's obviously, there's tons of people out there on PC, so I think they're ahead of that curve. They've already leveraged that market with Game Pass, and I think Game Pass is phenomenal. I don't buy video games anymore. I just play what's in Game Pass. There's so much there that I have no need to anymore. Especially when they roped in EA into that. Now you've got all those EA games in there. So Xbox is just kind of just ahead of that curve. I will point out that EA could potentially make a phenomenal amount of money if they get this NCAA thing figured out and they can produce another NCAA football game, because I think that would be even more popular.
That's happening.
Yeah, I think that would be even more popular than Madden would be. I know, because I don't play Madden, but if an NCAA game came out, I would play that in a heartbeat.
Same.
I think they would get everybody who plays Madden plus an extra chunk of people. So that's a huge... EA needs to work that out.
So on that note, just real quickly. So EA obviously, you know, lost their, you know, FIFA, you know, contract, right? Right. And Madden, NFL's contract with EA, I think ends next year. So it's possible not that it will. I mean, they obviously have had lots of contracts or whatever, but that's up for something that could have some change. What's the other, you know, they've basketball, obviously they lost a while back and that's been with 2K. And so, there's a lot of change with EA in the sport because they've kind of dominated the sports world. So that's something that, you know, they just have to be a little careful of, I think, right now.
So just to kind of follow up there, looking at an article from 2020, mm-hmm. EA signed a 5-year extension for their contract. So they are locked in with Madden until at least 2026.
Okay. I maybe was looking at something else on that thing because I thought I just recently read an article saying it was next year. So maybe I was seeing something wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I was.
I think these sports games and, you know, these deals, they're in some ways a little bit anti-competitive, right? I mean,
yeah,
you don't really see many games. You don't have multiple football games. There is only Madden. And I don't think that any, you know, unlike Call of Duty, where there are competitive shooters out there that do match Call of Duty, there are no competitive you know, right. football games that match Madden. There are no right. competitive baseball games that match MLB The Show.
Yep.
So they're interesting. They're definitely interesting. But I agree, Connor. If they come out with another NCAA game, I'm gonna be on that day one. I want that for sure. All right. Anything else we want to pull out of MPD sales, or should we move on to number five? All right, number five, in the latest episode of the gripping daytime sitcom General Console Wars, that's what I'm calling it, as any regular listener would know, now even Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is getting involved, saying he's, quote, very confident that the company's planned acquisition of Activision Blizzard will gain regulatory approval. The proposed $68.7 billion acquisition of the Call of Duty publisher would be the game industry's biggest ever deal, but is currently being scrutinized by regulators concerned about antitrust issues during a time of increasing consolidation in the gaming industry. We've been covering this story extensively on the show, so any regular listeners would be well-versed on that. And if you haven't been checking out our show, go ahead and listen to some of our past episodes. The statement, though, is what's new, and it reads in full. And so we feel very confident, of course, any acquisition of this size would go through scrutiny, but we feel very confident that we'll come out. You know, we are number four, number five, depending on how you count in gaming. In fact, the number one player in this case, Sony, I think even in this period has acquired three companies. So if this is about competition, let us have competition, end quote. This is really starting to feel like Sega do what Nintendo don't. Again, we really got some console wars brewing. Connor, you have not had your chance to have your say on this yet. Anything you want to say about this gripping daytime sitcom that we have, Xbox versus PlayStation?
I mean, my personal opinion is that a console war is a ridiculous notion. You play what you play. You play what games you want to play on whatever system and just let other people do what they want to do. That's just my personal opinion on it. But from an Xbox point of view, they're acquiring these companies and they have to do something with it if they're going to continue to be competitive at all. We've seen their main flagship in Halo flounder. It's failing. Many people will say that it's already failed. So if they're acquiring all these companies, it's very, very important that they do something with it and produce quality games, and they produce games on a regular basis, and they continue to support those games. They can't let a company like They can't let these companies just flounder and not do anything. So it's all well and good that they're out there buying all these companies for monstrous amounts of money, but they have to do something with it. Because like you said, there's no games out there to play. And Xbox is, you know, they've acquired a bunch of companies recently, so obviously it's going to take some time to develop those games and get them out there, but they just have to do something with it. And I can't say I'm filled with a whole lot of confidence just looking at Halo. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll learn their lessons.
Sure.
But they got to do something with it because Sony is doing something, and Xbox just isn't, in my opinion. So,
yeah, for sure. Jason, what do you feel about this whole competition? If it's about competition, let us have competition. I actually kind of found that to be a bit cringe from Satya, a CEO of a company as large as Microsoft. I feel like should probably not be egging on this in this way. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, but I see where he's coming from because he's saying what we have been saying, right? I get it that we're saying CEO. I mean, what we are saying and what he's kind of trying, I think, to put out a public statement on is, again, Sony's the one who really started dragging through the mud here, right? Sony's the one who started this whole public war. Sony's the one who went out there and is saying all these things about how, you know, there's no competition and how this will be bad for gamers as a whole. And like, they're the ones who did it all. And I feel like they are, you know, having to kind of put up some defenses a little bit and kind of stop and kind of do a little bit of damage control. And, you know, rather than just sit back and let a rhetoric be that, yep, this is what Sony is saying is fact. They have to kind of come back and go like, well, wait a second. No, this is reality. Let's go and look at what the numbers are. We're not the leader here. You know, Sony's acting like we are, and we're not. We are number three on this. It's Sony, then Nintendo, then us on console sales, right? Obviously with console sales, that means also on software sales, right? Because They don't have.
I think. Any units I think Nintendo there. Is number one, possibly at least in first party software sales. I was going to look this up. I'm trying to see if I can find it quickly. I think he's largely referring to a particular study that was done. And I want to find it. I think it's not Sony who's number one, actually. It's Tencent, which is a little bit frightening.
Yeah, I'll get into that in a second.
And then it was Sony. And then it was, I believe, Apple, then Google, then Xbox. Here it is. So top 10 gaming public companies by game revenues. Number one is Tencent at for 2021, $32.8 billion. Number two was Sony at $18.2 billion. Number three was Apple at $15.3 billion. And then number four was Microsoft actually at $12.9 billion. And then Google fifth on $11 billion. What's interesting is this same study puts Activision Blizzard at $8.1 billion by revenue. So if you added 8.1 to 12.9, you'd be at $19 billion, which would put Microsoft just ahead of Sony in gaming revenue with this acquisition and merger. So I think that's the study he's referring to in terms of who's the market leader, etc.
The only other thing I thought on this that was a bit odd to me is for him to say something along the lines of, you know, I think even in this period, Sony has acquired three companies. You know, like, he definitely knows how many they've done.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I think that Sony could find themselves in a position where any more acquisitions that they make going forward, Microsoft could start playing hardball on them.
Yeah.
I think, because you've asked me before, why did the Bungie deal go so quickly? I think it's because nobody fought it.
Yeah.
And I think Microsoft might be rethinking that position.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, truthfully, before this little war got fired up, before Sony started making a fuss and doing all this, let's go back to all last year and all the year before that. You have all of, you know, Xbox coming out and Phil Spencer being like, we are all for diverse gaming and we are great. You know, we are cool with this being at Sony and we, you know, are here for the gamer and we, you know, never want to, you know, keep a game from, you know, someone. Now it's almost like this has fired them up, kind of going like, you know what? Screw you a little bit. Cause whereas Sony's very much not taking that take, right? So Xbox has been very public about, you know, being for the gamer and having stuff, you know, good for them, you know, like we're very excited for them over there and doing this and that. And it's almost like, you know, they've been the nice guy and they're kind of going like, man, nice guy's finishing last, but you're not going to be the nice guy no more.
Yeah. Kind of feels that way. Connor, I'm interested in your take. I hear a lot of people talking about Phil Spencer as if he talks out of the both sides of his mouth when he says what Jason just brought up, where he says that we want to bring games to more gamers, not less. People say, oh, well, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth because then he also has exclusives on his console, like from Bethesda or his own first party consoles. I think that that's unfair because, as you pointed out, Microsoft are embracing PC, they're embracing cloud, they're trying to put Game Pass everywhere. I think they'd put it on PlayStation if Sony would let them.
Sure.
But I don't know. I'm curious, Connor, your take. Do you think he's talking out of both sides of his mouth or do you kind of align more where I sit on it?
I think Xbox has taken a lot of steps to get more games out to more people with their service, with Game Pass specifically, and it being both Xbox and PC, and them trying to push forward and drive through the cloud gaming beta. Obviously, it's very hiccupy right now, but they're still working it, they're still trying to push it, and I think based on that, I mean, I can pick up an Xbox game and play it on my iPhone. You could have a Mac and you could play an Xbox game on it. I think based on their services that they're trying to do, they're really trying to push games out to more people because you don't have to buy an Xbox to own Game Pass. You can buy you can just buy a Game Pass subscription and you can play it on whatever. Yep. So you don't like it's to them. It seems to me with the services Xbox is pressing, it's not about the console. It's about, you know, the service and the game they're providing. So I would say that they're doing more to push more games out to more people than Sony is.
for sure. Yeah, I totally agree. And that's like I'm glad that you're kind of thinking along the same lines as I do, because every time I hear other people mentioning, whether it's on social media or their gaming podcast, or and I hear them, you know, harping on this, well, Phil Spencer talks out of both sides of his mouth all the time in that regard. I'm like, I just don't agree. Like, I get that he's just not dumping Halo onto PlayStation, but come on, guys. Like, at a certain point, it is still a business. Right. It still is a competitive business. Like, Microsoft can't just be stupid about what they do just so that when they say something, you can't have some kind of weird gotcha moment.
Yep.
The reality is that you could go buy a $100 tablet from Walmart, and you can, as long as you've got good internet, you can stream any Xbox console game through that tablet right now with an Xbox controller via Bluetooth.
Yep.
Like, you cannot do that with Sony games. You cannot do it.
You can get an NVIDIA Shield, plug it into your, you know, TV, and boom, stream right there on your TV. So you absolutely don't have to have, you know, a console from Xbox.
Exactly. And they're trying to work on the TV apps and everything. So yeah, they're gonna make it even easier.
You'll be doing it on Google Chrome sticks and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yep.
Roku's.
And I stand by that. If PlayStation would sign a deal with Xbox where Game Pass could be on PlayStation, I think Xbox would.
I think they absolutely would. But at this point, it would be stupid of PlayStation to do that.
Agreed. Agreed. Absolutely. All right, let's move on to number six. Sony Interactive Entertainment has released the PlayStation VR 2 trailer featuring the slogan, "Feel a new real." There's a quote, "Discover how the revolutionary immersive features of PlayStation VR 2 can transport you to thrilling worlds that feel, look, and sound real through PlayStation VR 2 Sense technology," end quote. The video shows off some of the headline features of the upcoming hardware, including its 4K HDR display, eye tracking, foveated rendering, 110-degree field of view, and adaptive triggers and haptics. Sony recently confirmed that PSVR 2 will launch in early 2023 and won't be backwards compatible with PSVR 1. SIE President Jim Ryan has said that there will be more than 20 games ready for the launch of PSVR 2. Speaking on the PlayStation blog podcast, SVP Platform Experience Hideki Nishino said that PSVR games are not compatible with PSVR 2 because of PSVR 2 are because of the way PSVR 2 is designed to deliver a truly next-gen VR experience. PSVR 2 has much more advanced features, like all the new controllers with haptic feedback, adaptive triggers, and inside-out tracking, eye tracking, and the headset 3D audio coming together, of course. So this means developing PSVR 2 requires a whole different approach from the original PSVR, end quote. My first response to this is, well, I guess Sony believes in generations again now.
I've always never understood the whole, like, this is way better and it's more advanced, so it can't do the older, worse crap. Like, I've never, ever understood it. It's so on purpose. It's absolutely the, yep. Well, if you buy the new one, but you still have old VR games, you can be satisfied to go and play those. But if you don't have those games, you have to buy new games. So then we're going to have to, like, it's so on purpose. Like, I've never understood it. I completely agree with you. And this is not a PlayStation thing. This is an everything thing. They all do it. It drives me nuts.
Completely, completely agree. I will say, though, and maybe I'm just a sucker for new tech, but this VR 2 headset is starting
to itch at me.
I'm starting to think, oh man, maybe I'm a little bit interested in this one. There's only the one cable. There's not all the camera and all this other stuff. It's just one cable, plug the headset in and go. Like, maybe I'll be more interested in it because it's, you know, there's much less hurdles to get into it. I don't know, but I have to say that it's starting to itch at me a little bit. Connor, have you ever had any interest in VR?
I mean, I've never really had any interest in owning one. I enjoyed playing it because you had your PSVR that we played around with. I think VR is extremely interesting. I think, like you, I like shiny new tech. And I think for me, being a role-playing game kind of guy, VR is like that next huge step into role-playing. So if we can, like, if you can figure out a way to kind of merge RPG games with VR, I think that would be a super exciting thing to see in the future for sure. But the clunkiness of it and the kind of drawbacks or limitations to it as far as having space and things like that to need to play in and stuff like that is kind of what turns me off of it. But it's still very exciting, and I like to see it advance and move forward, I guess.
Yeah, I think in some ways that's why I did make the plunge with PSVR 1. I did play around with that. I saw the early experience. And part of me is hoping that PSVR 2 is really that where they get it all right. Like they understand what they need and they have the bits and pieces of the tech together that they need to make this successful. And part of me is hoping that that is true. And so I think that's another reason why I'm kind of drawn to it. Like, you know, maybe I would enjoy that step up from PSVR to PSVR 2, but I mean, I don't know. I do. Go ahead. Sorry, Jason.
I was just going to say, for what it's worth, I had the Meta, right? Oculus, so the whole thing is, I think the VR tech is cool. I think it has its place. I think there's some fun stuff to it. And I think that, PlayStation embraced it and has been moving forward with it, obviously. And it's always kind of baffled me that Xbox has not, especially with their, joint and likeness to PC, where PC is a bit of a stronger home to this VR stuff. It's always shocked me that they have not gone forward with this. I think Sony is way got the advantage on this, and I'm a little lost with why Xbox has just completely stayed away from this.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, it's like you read my mind. That's exactly what I wanted to say. I wanted to point out, because I feel like we've been really hard on PlayStation for many weeks on the show. And I wanted to say that I actually am really pleased with Sony and continuing with this tech and with this experience and trying to make it work and still investing in it and bringing new hardware to the forefront.
Yeah.
Something that, as you pointed out, none of the others are really doing right now.
Yeah.
All right. Our final news topic for tonight, former PlayStation US boss Sean Layden has joined Tencent as a strategic advisor. Layden, who was chairman of the company's Worldwide Studios Group when he left Sony in 2019, announced on LinkedIn on Monday that he hoped to help Tencent deepen their activities within the game industry. Chinese conglomerate Tencent has already invested more than 800 firms and is one of the biggest companies in the world by market value. In fact, in gaming, as we just talked about not that long ago on the show, they are number one. As well as owning League of Legends maker Riot Games, it also has a 40% stake in Epic Games and holds shares in Activision Blizzard, Ubisoft, PUBG Studios parent company Krafton, Platinum Games, and Marvelous Inc. Layden said, quote, "I'm delighted to share that I have recently joined Tencent Games as a strategic advisor. In this new role, I hope to advise, assist, and support the team at Tencent as they deepen their activities and commitments within the industry to which I've devoted the majority of my career. We are at an epoch-defining moment in gaming and interactive entertainment. There are many possible roads ahead, but only a few are profound, broadening, inclusive, edifying, inspiring, and or sustainable. I'm thrilled to continue this journey of discovery and thank Tencent for the opportunity," end quote. All I have to say is China, 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 China. They're coming. Their money is coming. They're coming for the game industry. We've talked about it many times on the show. If you don't believe us, start paying attention. I don't like this at all.
I don't either.
I thought Sean Layden was a great head for Sony. I thought that the period under Sean Layden was some of PlayStation's best periods. And
so
Jason, what do you think?
I have a question for you because I have some thoughts here, but this could change some form for me. So I didn't look it up and I should have. Why did Sean Layden leave PlayStation? I don't know what was the was there a rift? Did he leave on his own? What has he been doing since 2019? Because it sounds like in his quotes here, he's like, I'm happy to be back into the game. So what's
yeah, he hasn't done anything since he left PlayStation.
Which sounds like a they got rid of him kind of thing. You don't typically leave and do nothing.
Yeah, so he was replaced by Jim Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, he said, you know, Layden said that he was stepping down when he left. But a lot of people at the time believed that there was an internal power struggle between
him and
Layden and Jim Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're seeing that. I mean, PlayStation under Sean Layden was about the games. It was about indies. It was about first party studios. It was about innovation. It was about new IP.
Yeah.
That's the period that brought us Horizon, that brought us Ghost of Tsushima, that brought us Days Gone. Like all of these new IPs. PlayStation's
really, really strong at. Yeah.
Yeah. And PS4 exploded in sales under Sean Layden. Like that's the period. That's what turned me into a PlayStation gamer was the stuff that he was leading them to. And obviously since then with Jim Ryan, you know, it's all about, we've gone through a lot on this show, but I think that it's probably true that there was a rift internally and that Layden left because of that. And like I said, he has not done anything since.
Okay. Then. So here's my thought on this. And we're sitting here talking about China is coming, right? Well, although Tencent does not own any part of Sony, they have part with each other on things like Epic, right? And with several other things too. Like Tencent and Sony have this relationship that is getting closer and closer and closer together. And it's just been there. I'm sure listeners have heard it from me. And since it, I just have this like doom is impending. Tencent is coming for Sony thing, man. Like I just feel it. Part of my whole thing where I have like been very like, Xbox has all the money because it's Microsoft and Sony doesn't. You know what I mean? Like Microsoft could buy Sony like 400 times over kind of thing. And Microsoft could just bully. That's not the same truth with Tencent. So Tencent is got way more money than Sony does. And I'm just telling you, I see Tencent as someone who is coming towards Sony in a gigantic, huge way. And it scares me to death. And I'm just telling you, I wouldn't be shocked to hear in the coming years that Tencent is acquiring Sony. I just what I see happening. They have all sorts of closeness together. And the other thing with Tencent is they have their fingers everywhere in gaming. Even if they don't outright own something, they have huge parts of tons and tons of huge studios that they can influence and make massive change. I just don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, we just covered them last week or the week before because of their step up in ownership at Ubisoft. Yep. And then just the week before that was them buying a huge share from Software, which is the developer of Elden Ring.
Right.
I think it would be weird for a Japanese company to allow themselves to be acquired by a Chinese company.
Money talks.
So I hear you, but I also feel like Japan culturally are very, very proud, and it could be the one place where you can't do that. But we'll see. We'll see. Connor, I want to turn this over to you because one of the things I've heard rumored is that potentially Tencent could be looking to bringing its own market or its own console to market. Do you believe that there's any room in the market for a fourth major console?
I mean, that's kind of tough. It depends on what they're trying to sell it as. I think they need to make sure that they pick a kind of message behind it. And if they produce a compelling message and then they produce the hardware to support that message, there could be room. I think it's probably more likely that if they do that, they would probably encroach more on Sony. I think an acquisition of Sony and then kind of moving from there would be I guess, a better strategy. But if, like, Nintendo continues to sell hardware because their hardware is unique. Like, the Switch is a unique thing. It's not trying to do what Xbox and PlayStation does. They have a message for, like, this is what our console does. It does it well, and that's why it sells well. So if Tencent could produce that, if they could come up with some sort of message or idea behind their console, and then they produce it, definitely there's probably room for it, but it really depends on what they're trying to do with it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into something here in a minute, but they're behind something coming from Logitech that we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But, I mean, could they come out with something like the Steam Deck, like the Switch, but is actually significantly more powerful and able to run, you know, the Call of Duties, the Cyberpunks, or whatever, in a handheld form? And maybe that's where they come in and compete in this market.
I mean, if they do that, I guess we see something more. Our concern should be that they push Nintendo completely out of the market at that point if they're trying to encroach upon what Nintendo's doing, because Nintendo holds a very niche part of the market. You could see them pushing out maybe both Nintendo and Sony, or maybe they pick one or the other, but I guess we'll see.
I mean, you look at some of that and you go, like, I mean, we got to remember Xbox didn't exist in this, right? Like, it was, you know, you go back and it was like Atari and Nintendo, and then, you know, Sony entered the space. It's always been like it was two, and then you had three, because then you had Sony and Atari and
Sega.
And then it was Sega and Nintendo and Sony, and then you had the Dreamcast. And, you know, I mean, like, four has never worked. Three seems to be, and then even then, like, okay, well, then Sega went away and we had the two. Well, then Xbox entered in. And, you know, right now, there's even, like, the little talks of, like, you know, Atari kind of trying to come back into the space a little bit in a niche way, right?
Although,
like,
they want to come back as a publisher, not as a console maker.
Well, like how Sega did, basically. So Sega essentially out, boom, but they're a publisher. But Atari is doing the whole, like, they're releasing, like, basically, like, a Raspberry Pi version of a console. I mean, they're kind of doing the, like, a nostalgic, they're not really trying to truly be in the console world. And so now here we're talking the handhelds. I mean, you know, PlayStation really was in that at one time. They completely backed out. Now you've got the Steam Deck. They're entering that. For Tencent to come in, that means you're now in three in that segment. Like, I just don't, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying they wouldn't make it, but I do feel like it would push somebody out. Wherever they go in. So if they're successful, you know,
makes me wonder if the more obvious one here is not Microsoft, which is even more frightening, because, you know, they are already not as interested in console sales. So could the more obvious one be Microsoft?
That's a good point. You know, Tencent comes in and essentially runs to that point, you know, Microsoft just goes back into, you know, Android is, you know, on how many different phones? Just like how Windows is on how many different. So essentially PCs, Microsoft just says, like, hey, we'll continue to make this service and this software, and it's now going to be run on a Tencent device. You know what I mean? Like, or these Tencent devices. Here's the handheld version. Yep. Here's the console version. Here's the, you know what I mean? That's a point too. There you go.
Yep. All right, well, let's get into the few game announcements, and then let's get on out of here, because this has been a bumper-to-bumper show here, real packed. Number one, Electronic Arts Motive Studio has announced that it's working on an Iron Man game. We talked about this just not that long ago on the show, I feel like, Jason. Developed in collaboration with Marvel Games, the single-player third-person action-adventure title is currently in the pre-production phase. The game's development team is being led by executive producer Oliver Prolex. I don't even know how to even try. Who previously worked on Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy at Eidos Montreal. Motive, which previously developed Star Wars Squadrons, is currently handling EA's Dead Space remake, which is scheduled to release on January 27th of next year. Connor, are you excited about an Iron Man game?
I mean, Iron Man's probably my favorite Marvel character. Kind of tie with Captain America. I haven't played any of the Marvel games, so I really don't know what to expect. But it could be interesting. just kind of depends on what the game is and what story it tells and things like that. But, if I'm going to play one, it would probably be an Iron Man game. I'm much more interested in seeing the Dead Space remake, to be honest with you. Dead Space sure. was another.
Oh, that's right. You were, yeah, I was you big, were in, big Dead Space.
Fan. I was big into Dead Space as well for some reason. But yeah, if I'm going to play one, it's going to be an Iron Man game. But I can't really say this is something that super interests me just because it's not really my thing. But
yeah. I mean,
it feels like this is Anthem 2.0 with an Iron Man skin. But
I mean, well, you say that, but like the thing is like the studio that's working on this game doesn't do open world games. So it doesn't sound like it's going to be an open world. I would love to think of like, again, how much fun it is playing Spider-Man in this open world. Like if it was just your Iron Man, you can fly around and land and take out, you know, baddies and do stuff at like. I think it would be a blast, and you're like, you know, able to like switch between. I mean, think like Arkham, right? Like you kind of switch around and do some stuff, and you could put in and have it where sometimes your, you know, his alter ego or not his alter ego, but you're, you know, you're not Iron Man in the suit, right?
Sure.
So yeah, who knows? Whatever. But this is probably not going to be that type of game. Doesn't mean it can't be good, but it's not what I've always thought would be a really cool Iron Man. Yeah. So.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right, number two, EA has announced that Ted Lasso and AFC Richmond will be in FIFA 23. Ted Lasso, Coach Beard, and the biggest stars of the AFC Richmond squad, including Jamie Tartt, Danny Rojas, Sam Obasanya, Roy Kent, and Isaac McAdoo, will all be included in FIFA 23, along with Nelson Road, the club's home ground.
Danny Rojas, Danny Rojas. Football is life.
Football is life. Yes. Yes, I love Danny. He's a good character. Lasso will be playable manager in career mode, or you can manage AFC Richmond by swapping them into the Premier League or any other playable career mode league. In Ultimate Team, players will be able to use the AFC Richmond kits, as well as being able to select Ted Lasso or Coach Beard as your club's manager. All AFC Richmond content and foot will be available through objectives and challenges according to EA. I think this is a really cool crossover. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso, you should watch Ted Lasso. It's fucking brilliant.
It's not even a ton. It's not even like a ton of like sports. It's just a good sitcom. It's funny. It's good.
It's true.
Highly recommend it.
And Connor, I don't know if you noticed because I guess I don't know if you were watching Arsenal's game against Brentford this past weekend, but Jason Sudeikis was at the game and was a guest of Arsenal and was speaking with Mikel Arteta after the game.
It's cool.
I didn't watch the game. I watched the highlights because that's how I do it because it's bad luck when I watch the game because it never ends well. Never
good.
Ends
Stop
well.
Fucking watching. I don't watch completely because we're really good this year now.
Yeah,
so.
I just watch highlights. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, crossovers are always cool. It's always good to see stuff like that happen. So it should be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Number three, Cyberpunk 2077 is currently attracting over 1 million players daily, according to CD Projekt. Quote, each day of the week, Night City has been visited by 1 million players, both new and returning. We wanted to use this opportunity to thank you for being with us and playing the game, end quote. Earlier this week, Cyberpunk 2077 hit 86,130 concurrent players on Steam, its highest total since January of 2021, just a month after the game was released. The recent spike in players follows the launch of the game's 1.6 patch, which added various new features and improvements and coincides with a half-price discount on Steam, as well as the launch of the Cyberpunk anime Edgerunners on Netflix. Yeah, it's great to see this game really seems like they've turned the corner and they've come full circle and people are coming back and giving them a chance again. It looks like another one of these great redemption stories and gives me a vague inkling of hope that maybe Halo Infinite could do it too one day. All right, number four, the first teaser trailer for the Super Mario Bros. Movie will be shown next month at New York Comic Con. It's been announced. In a tweet from the convention's official account, it revealed that it will be shown on Thursday, October 6th. So that will be coming, that announcement trailer coming up soon, and then the movie, I think, is early next year. Number five, Logitech has announced G Cloud, an Android-powered gaming handheld, which is compatible with Xbox Cloud Gaming, Steam Link, and NVIDIA's GeForce Now. Launching on October 17th, For $349.99, the G Cloud features a 7-inch HD touchscreen, 12-hour battery life, haptics, gyroscope, and remappable controls. For those who pre-order now, the G Cloud is only $299 for a limited time. The G Cloud was developed in partnership with, you guessed it, Tencent Games, and supports cloud streaming from a variety of apps, in addition to the ability to stream local games from an Xbox console with the Xbox app. Jason, had you seen this? I think this was announced today or yesterday.
I mean, I didn't see it until it was in the notes. I mean, I did see it before we started talking here. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a Steam Deck or a Switch, basically. Yeah. The difference, of course, being that this will not be able to run any games natively.
Yeah.
It's all going to be streaming. So it's a pretty hefty price.
For just a streaming device, yeah.
Yeah. But this is, like I said, in partnership with Tencent Games, you know. Maybe this is a test bed. Who knows? Connor, would you pick this up? I don't know.
I wouldn't. I don't see. I don't see a purpose to it. I can already do that on my phone.
Yep. Exactly.
I can already do it on my iPhone. Why would I need this? I mean, that's just me personally. Yep. I don't know. Maybe some people would want it. I wouldn't. That's just me.
Yeah. Agreed. It seems like a tough sell for me.
Yep, I agree.
All right, finally, number six, Gearbox CEO Randy Pitchford has said that Tiny Tina's Wonderlands experiences are in development for the game after it shattered the company's targets. The Borderlands spinoff was released in March for PlayStation and Xbox consoles. And he said, quote, Gearbox Software achieved a major victory this past year with the launch of a new franchise, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. We now clearly have a new franchise on our hands with future experiences already under development at Gearbox, end quote. Gearbox recently completed the acquisition of Tiny Tina's Wonderlands co-developer Lost Boys Interactive in June of this year. The move added around 220 team members to Gearbox, taking its global headcount to approximately 1,300. I wanted to add this in here. It's not really an announcement, but it's the game I'm playing right now. And so I thought it was really interesting to see that this game has been a big hit for Gearbox and that they're expanding from it and that they're going to embrace it. And maybe this will be their next sort of franchise that they kind of plumb post-Borderlands. But good for Gearbox. Good for Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. It's a cool game. I'm glad that they're doing well. All right, new releases. I'm not going to read all of these off, but this week, starting on the September 23rd, Shovel Knight Dig is out, and then next week, Grounded full release is going to be out, and Valkyrie Elysium will be coming out. Those releases are the 27th and 29th, respectively. So those are the last few kind of games coming out in the month of September. Early October, you can start looking forward to Overwatch 2. And then later in the month is when you're going to finally get Gotham Knights and Call of Duty, but we'll cover those as we get closer. Otherwise, Game Pass, this week in Game Pass, Deathloop and Hardspace Shipbreaker join the service on September 20th. Spider Heck, Beacon Pines, and Slam Rancher 2 joined on September 22nd. And then next week, Moon Scars and the Grounded full release that we already mentioned on September 27th. Let's Build a Zoo and Valheim on September 29th, and then Paw Patrol Grand Prix on September 30th. Of course, we kind of covered Odyssey joining the service last week, and that's why Jason's playing it there. But plenty more stuff, cool stuff coming to Game Pass. PlayStation Premium Service, which is sort of their competitor to Game Pass, they've got a bunch of new titles now available this week, sort of headlined by Deathloop also coming to their service. Assassin's Creed Origins coming to their service. And then a couple more PlayStation Classic games coming, including the Sly Cooper Collection. So you can get four of the Sly Cooper games via the Classic backwards, or not backwards compatible, but their Classic Game Selection in PlayStation Plus Premium. All right, that's it for the show. Connor, before we go, any final things you want to say?
Yeah, some great Warhammer 40K games coming out this year. November 30th, Warhammer 40K Darktide coming to Game Pass. Play that game. Should be great. Very excited.
Yeah, that one was supposed to be out already, but it got bumped back a few months. So I'm hoping that it turns out well. I'll be there. I'll play it with you. You got a co-op partner in me.
I'm very excited. Because I love the 40K universe. It's very good to see them branching out and breaking new games, especially with Warhammer 40K Space Marine. If you haven't played that, also a great game. And Space Marine 2 coming out as well. Who knows when? They haven't announced anything yet for it, but should be exciting stuff. So.
For sure, for sure. Jason, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Just that Connor has to read the outro, because it's at this point, it's
tradition.
Tradition, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So Connor, with as much gusto as you can manage, please take us home from this episode. Hopefully you've got the notes up and you're ready to go.
I mean, I got it, but reading's hard, so I'll do my best. Anyway.
All right.
I mean,
all right, everyone, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the 114th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed as much as we did. Remember to like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. And if you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. This show will be back again next week with episode 115. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and game hard.